and that was my grandmother's, and that was my mother's, and these two were his mother's, and so forth and so on, so that...
Well, you've got very nice things.
Well, you know...
Several furniture.
Testing. Yes, it's working now.
Well, for beginners, my name is Jack Holzeter, and this is my voice. Now, Mr. Penberthy, what is your name, and how long have you lived in Mineral Point?
I've lived in Mineral Point all my life. And this picture I have here of the Larkin Hotel is where I was born. And my folks built this other building a half a block away, and I've been there all my life.
In the same location?
Yes.
That's more since about the turn of the century.
That's right.
Around then. And how many children were there in your family?
Five. Four girls and...
And yourself. Okay. And you, Mr. Neal, your name and age, if you wish to tell us, and how long have you been at Mineral Point?
Well, Robert Neal, I was born and raised here too. So Roy and I are old inhabitants.
You've lived in a few more places though than Mr. Penberthy. He's
yes.
been in one spot
yeah,
for a long time.
Yeah. Well, I left Mineral Point in 1928 for Chicago and Points East, and then returned in 1933. World's Fair was 33,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
Why has it gone longer than that? What am I talking about? Well, when I left Mineral Point, I came back in 33, I remember that, because I went to World's Fair. But that's only 5 years. I thought it was gone 7.
Well.
Give or take 2 years.
When did you get interested in Mineral Point's past?
Well, having lived here, you can't help but get interested in it. And when I came back from London and saw so many of the houses gone, I wanted to save one, so walking out Brewery Street, as we called it then, Roy, it never was known as Shake Rag.
No.
It was always Brewery Street. And bought one of them just to save it. So many of them were destroyed in my absence.
Not because you were gone, but why were they taken down?
Well, they just served their purpose and weren't modern in any event. No electricity, no water. And they just served their purpose. They were deteriorating. And people who wanted rock for foundations just said, get an old house or buy an old house and wreck it and use the rock. I figured out one time there were 70 houses in the general area at the peak of the inhabitants of the area, and it just deteriorated to there, I think, about 13 left.
70, and you say the area, you mean the brewery?
Well,
I mean
bounding Spruce Street, West North Commerce, and Shake Rag. It's a triangle. And in that area, I figure there were 70 houses.
Do you remember about the same kind of thing, Mr. Pember?
Yes, I do.
When were your parents or grandparents or aunts or uncles responsible ever for whetting your interest in points past?
No. Not mine.
I've always been told that you, Mr. Neal, began to pick things off junk piles and whatnot when you were a child. Is that?
Well, I started carting stuff home when I was, I guess, in high school.
What kind of stuff?
Well, things that I just wanted to save or liked. Amongst them, the territorial strongbox, which we have to do something about. Things that I didn't want to see destroyed, and I just bring them home and was accused of carting junk home.
But you've saved it all to this day. Were you similarly inclined, Mr. Pember?
Yeah.
Did you haul junk home?
Oh, no, not that. No. My father was a veterinarian, and I was associated with horses more or less all through my life.
Uh-huh.
I had a show horse up to about 7 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Happiest days of my life.
With show horses?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And had my father lived, I would have had to have been a veterinarian, and I wouldn't have liked it.
Why not?
Oh, I can't stand to see anything suffering in that. For example, I went to work at a grocery store after I finished high school, and one day the butcher said to me, "Roy, I want you to help me butcher this afternoon." I said, "Listen, I never saw anything killed in my life, and I don't want to help." He said, "I'll show you what to do." So I went down, and back of the store they had a big cement platform, and there was a ring in the bottom. They brought in this calf with a big rope and halter. They put it through that ring and pulled his head down tight. I said, "All you have to do is hold that rug tight while I whack it over the head." I said, "I'm not holding that rope for you to whack that calf over the head." And I let it go, and I went upstairs. I thought, well, I'll lose my job, but I don't care. So that was my experience with that. But I never did like to see anything killed. Years ago, when there used to be chickens crossing the road, I'd slow up to let them go by. You know, a lot of people would go faster to see how many they could get.
But your interest in point history, then, is just because you have a good memory and you're interested in it, and you've accumulated all of this as time has passed?
Yes.
Rather more than going into the junk piles and pulling things off and taking it home and preserving it.
No.
It's more a mental activity. All right. Today we wanted to talk specifically about Pendarvis, but stories about butchering at grocery stores. Where was this grocery store, by the way?
Right on Commerce Street, about half a block from where I live there. Right on Commerce Street. The three brothers owned, and they had a tremendous business. They had charge accounts and delivery service, and this had tremendous.
Yikes!
Yes.
I didn't know they butchered. Was Ted Hartley there then?
Ted Hartley was a butcher, yes. Uh-huh. Yeah.
How long did you stay there?
3 years, I think it was. Then I went away to school.
And then you came back?
I came back. I was on the year I was called back because the manager went kind of haywire and I had to take over. I went to Racine College.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been there ever since.
Did you go to school, Mr. Neal?
Yes, not at the university. I went in the Art Institute in Chicago and the University of London.
Hmm. Did you study art?
Yes, more or less. Artistic things. No academic courses as such.
No art history, but fine arts.
Fine arts.
Execution of fine arts. All right. Principally, we are interested in the background of Pendarvis itself and the immediate neighborhood. What was the place like, that end of town, the corner of what is now called Shake Rag and Spruce, at the time of your first recollections, since you're, I think, the elder of the two, Mr. Penberthy, why don't you start?
Did you know I was older than Bob?
We were told that another old timer at Mineral Point.
Much older, Roy.
How old do you say you are? I lie about my age all the time. I do.
You do?
Yeah, down in Monroe, I had to go to the hospital. I lied 5 years about my age.
Good for you.
And you know something else? When you get the grocery at a discount, you know, I'd rather pay the full amount than say I was 62 or whatever it was, 65.
Well, Laura Knorr is the one who let me in on the fact that you're a little older than Mr.
Yeah. Yeah, sure.
All right.
There used to be a foundry in that area, which was an operator, Lanyon's Foundry.
Yeah, but that was...
Huh?
Wern's Foundry was down there on Shaker.
Well, Lanyon, too, there.
Well,
at the row of houses. Right in there.
I thought Lanyon's Foundry was over.
And there was a blacksmith shop across the road. Do you remember that?
You're all mixed up, Roy. There was never anything. Then on the east side is Shake Rag across from Pendarvis.
No, not across from Pendarvis.
Well, that's what he's asking about.
Well, no, just on that corner, more or less that intersection down there.
Oh, I beg your pardon, man.
Either side of the street, doesn't make any difference.
Was Sammy Webb still around when you were a kid?
Who?
Sammy Webb.
I never heard of him.
That had the pop factory there where Soderstrom's house is.
I didn't know that either. I spent many a day at Soderstrom. They had three boys, we were about the same age. And I spent many a day out there.
Well, Sammy Webb had a pop factory there.
He did?
And used the spring that's on the property to make the pop.
Oh.
Where was the pop factory?
In what's now Bill Kiddo's house.
Rock.
Uh-huh.
The corner of Spruce and Shake Rag.
Yeah.
Yeah, the opposite corner, the opposite side. So that was a pop factory. Then going down the street from Mr. Kiddo's house towards the center part of town, what was?
Who lived there where Mrs. Ash lived?
Smith. She was a Smith.
Who Mrs. Ash was?
Wasn't she? Yeah, and he worked at the brewery. Don't you remember he used to drive that brewery truck? Or a horse wagon, rather.
Who, Mr. Smith did, or?
Mr. Smith, yeah. I don't know what his first name was. That's another thing. We never knew what older people's first name was. It was all Mr. So-and-so, Mr. So-and-so. When my sister and I were talking the other evening, I said, Cole, what was Mr. Adams' first name? That was in the first house here, around the corner, right there. And neither one of us could think of his first name. And I said, well, you know why, don't you? No, I don't. I said, we never called older people by the first name. Mr. Adams, it was. Ed Adams.
That's right.
And we used to tip our hats to the men teachers in high school. We were scared to death of them.
When did you stop wearing a hat?
Oh, I don't know what year that, I'm not sure to feel any years.
Okay, so there was a pop factory. Where did people, now going up the street towards the brewery, who lived along in there, did you know, when you were children?
Sammy Mills.
Who lived in the
three-story
log house, Roy? Who lived in the three-story log house?
I don't recall.
What about the little cottage?
About the first house there, I don't know their names. Govies lived there.
Govies,
the house of ill fame, don't you know?
Yes.
And
Polperro, this is.
No, you're talking about Pendarvis now.
Yeah,
That was Sampy Ann Govies.
Yes, house. That's right. But they moved to Beloit, and when Hazel, the daughter, came back, it wasn't Govie anymore, it was Gavie. They changed the accent, you know. Gavie, Hazel Gavie.
About when was that?
Oh, gee, I don't know. I don't know dates.
Okay. And then next to that?
Next to that, well, coming Keith, this way? Coming to town?
No, going towards the brewery.
Towards the brewery, huh?
Kiefer's.
Well, Sammy Mills lived in there.
No, Kiefer's. Kiefer's lived in the two-story.
Who?
Kiefer's, didn't they? Kiefer's?
I don't know, how do you spell it?
Kiefer, the Kiefer's around here.
Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know that, no.
Well, what?
Conrad Easton.
Yeah, so he was farther up.
Yes, not much. And Fanny Toby lived there, the nigger lady.
Well,
lived where?
Right in that area there, as you go towards the brewery.
Okay.
In about the second house, right in there.
Well, the picture that's in the Historical Society that I saved in this junk, as you call it.
I didn't call it junk, huh?
Shows the house north of, what was the, Pete, who lived in the,
Pete Quare?
No, Annie Eckstein's father.
Annie Eckstein's father, Annie Seeger's father.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it was Pete Seeger, I guess it was.
Yeah, yeah. Pete Seeger, huh?
Lived in there. And before that, I think the founder of the name of Kiefer's lived in there.
Oh, I didn't know that. Mrs. Seeger had money in her mattress to pay for her funeral expenses.
Yeah, I heard that.
That was one of the houses that's gone now?
No.
No, no.
And which house is that?
The two-story rock house.
Okay.
The house north of it was Katie Mills, I thought.
Yeah, Kate, that's right.
And then where was Sammy?
Well, she was Sammy's wife.
Well, they lived in the, and it was a whitewashed front. Mr. Gundry told me they used to whitewash the front of the house every year and went over the front door with bluing. And he said the effect on this weathered wood of the silvery blue and the fresh white was, he said, he couldn't beat it.
Have you ever seen that done elsewhere? I've never heard of this. Sounds attractive.
Well, it's very attractive. Well, they used bluing for coloring.
That would have been in the house just north of Pendarvis.
Yeah.
Or rather, Trelawney.
And the picture that's in the archives here shows the house standing in a whitewash. It's all deteriorated on the front, but you can see that it was whitewashed. Mm-hmm. And then above that was Conrad Yeastian.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And the root house back of it, where he lived in the winter.
Yes.
You ever hear that?
Yes.
That he put on his coat and went in the root house, and I don't know what kind of heat he had, but he used to stop at Yikes and get some food, Conrad, and come out and crawl in the root house. And then Johnny Francis lived up where the leaders,
the next Johnny house, Francis, the ex-sheriff?
I don't know, the Francis family was related to Kissingberry's.
Yes.
Well, they're photographs.
There's a rock and all woodsy around there, don't you remember?
Yeah. And was big pine trees in front, huge pine trees.
Now, how far up the street was that?
Well, it's the next house north.
So it would be where that, where currently stands the ranch house with the brick lower story in the
next place.
Farther
ranch house
the very next place north of that.
Way up on the hill. Way up.
I see. Hill. Do you remember where the that new place is now? There being a house there.
No. I don't think there ever.
That's where Sappy Goby's barn was.
Okay, there were actually. The early records will show that Mr. Moyle did, or Richard Moyle, did build a house there that later became Walter Darlington's. Mr. Kissingberry, who owned the original large parcel, I think it's wise to interject some of this so we don't get confused, was rather offhanded in his real estate transactions. A couple of court cases in the 1850s prove this. And Moyle went off to northern Michigan and he sold the house to Walter Darlington. And it was still standing on the 1870 maps that we have. And there was a little bitty shed-like arrangement exactly on the street. There wasn't any sidewalk that went by where the white and white frame and red brick places.
Moyle and Darlington, their names is unknown to me.
Unknown to me too. I never knew them.
Well, Emily Darlington you may have heard of. A daughter of Darlington, he died, and his widow remarried, I've forgotten whom. And she, Emily, was a seamstress here in town well into the 1880s and 90s, we find her name. She doesn't ring a bell.
Not a bell, no.
All right.
No.
That's fine. now, let's go up Spruce Street.
Okay.
The Pop Factory on the one corner.
Yeah.
Who lived in what we call the Bowden House, the one that Bill Kittle sold before he bought the Pop Factory?
Well, that's
the Rock House.
The east end of the row?
No, across the street. We'll stay across the street from the row for just a second or two and then go to the row itself. Do you remember?
Yes. Bill Kittle had his studio there, Bob.
I know.
Who had it?
Bill Kittle had a studio.
Oh, I didn't know.
Who lived in there? Finkelmeyer?
I don't know.
The Bowdens were not associated with it in your recollection.
No.
Okay. Then on the other side of the street.
The other side of the street, Christopher O'Day had a repair shop, didn't he?
Yeah. Kit O'Day.
Kit Day. Yeah, Kit Day.
What kind of repair shop?
Shoes.
Were there any grocery stores or anything like that?
Just shoes. And he had a lot of stuffed birds in there. Do you remember that? Open porch and went straight up and the back tapered like that.
Well, that's where Joan Freeman from the Historical Society did some digging
there.
Oh, was it?
Right. She interviewed you and you're enshrined in her notes, Mr. Penworthy, and so is Mr. Neal, of course.
Uh-huh.
Oh, but that was the first structure.
I see.
For that you recall.
Yes.
There. Then go uphill from there towards the row.
Was there a house way in the back, Roy? There was a foundation back there.
Back of what?
Back of Kid Day's.
Oh, yes, there was. I think there was. Uh-huh.
But I don't know anything about it.
No, I don't either, but I do think there was a house.
The stone steps are still there, buried in the dirt. They're completely covered over. I've always intended when I was out there to dig those out so we could see them, but evidently went up to this house in the back.
Yeah. I don't recall the house either.
Do you recall nothing then between the row and the shoe shop?
No. There wouldn't have been much space there.
Well, there was another 30-foot lot in there that on which there was a house originally owned by somebody named Gregory Phillips, who built it around 1847 or a little earlier. Probably a log place that was abandoned and sold for taxes, that lot, in the 60s during the war. Mr. Gregory Phillips, and we don't know how he's related to the other Phillipses, went out to
Did Shady town. Phillips live out there all of his life?
Where'd he live?
Out in the row.
I didn't know that. I didn't know Shady.
You know Shady Phillips?
Oh, sure, I knew him well, sure. But I didn't know where he lived.
Well, I thought he lived out there.
Oh.
He had daughter Genevieve.
Yeah, Genevieve, uh-huh. Yeah, I just saw her this year, too.
You did?
Uh-huh. Lovely girl.
Where is she?
I don't know. She said, I don't recall.
What's her last name now?
I don't know that either.
Where'd you see her, Roy?
She came down to see me. Down my place. Genevieve Phillips. Her mother was a goldsworthy. Really.
Ah.
Charlie Goldsworthy. She was Charlie Goldsworthy's daughter, and she married this guy. What's his name?
Shady Phillips.
Shady Phillips. Yeah. And Genevieve had one girl with Genevieve, the only daughter. And she died real young. The mother died real young. And Shady built a monument up in the cemetery himself. And
That barrel-shaped rock thing up there?
Yeah, that's right. Uh-huh.
Roy, the Goldsworthy's. The house had burned. Do you remember the house way back, sort of back of the row, the Goldsworthy house that burned?
No, I don't remember that.
There's all cement, I know, I guess maybe it's all taken out, but it had cement walk around it. I remember the house burning. You don't remember that?
No, I don't either.
Now, the Goldsworthys were related to the Tamblins. Do you know about that?
Tamblin, that's
really Isaac Tamblin.
Isaac Tamblin, huh?
Yeah.
Where was
daughter he? Married a Goldsworthy.
Oh. No, I've heard the name Isaac Tamblin, but I don't remember him.
No,
well, I don't know why, how that got the name of Tamblin Row.
I don't either.
Well, we
because
do.
Because Tamblin's Row,
yeah,
was that down there where the foundry was, is now,
oh,
where Summers is.
Yeah.
You remember that long row of houses?
Yes, I sure do.
Well, wasn't that Tamblin's Row?
No, we just called it the Row. I don't know.
Was this on Shake Ray?
Yes.
Up towards town.
Yeah.
Yes.
It was a row of frame houses.
Yes.
Yeah.
We have a photograph.
Built into the hill. I have the watercolor. I wanted to buy that house.
Oh. Hey, do you know something? There was a lady came from Minnesota. She used to live there. She wanted to see the place once more, and she was in terrible health, you know, the poor thing. And she said the place faced north. Well, that threw me for a loss because it faced east, you know.
Yeah.
And the place was torn down anyway. She couldn't have seen it. She came all the way from Minnesota just to see her old home once more.
This was which? The
row. The row.
Down.
And you know, we rented the pasture there for years for our horses and that. And
what pasture, Roy?
Well, Mrs. Warren's pasture.
Oh.
But that had been torn down about when?
Oh, gee, I don't know.
Oh, do you remember the building that was the foundry, the Warren foundry there?
Yes, that's the one I was trying to tell you about.
Well, you said Lanyon.
Oh, did I say it? Yeah, I thought it was Lanyon.
And the Warren house is up on the hill.
Yes, that's right.
Warren is spelled how?
W-A-R-N-E.
Yeah. Mrs. Hales was the daughter, wasn't she?
Yeah. Joe Lang told me that as a kid, they evidently had a shake roof on the foundry, and when they were running the furnace or something to melt the iron, he was hired for a nickel a day to sit on the roof with a bucket of water, and as the sparks came out of the low chimney lit on the roof, he was supposed to pour water, dipper of water on them.
Do you remember the blacksmith shop that was right across the road from that, McMurrow's?
Yes,
uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, didn't McMurrow's build Loretta's house?
No, I don't know.
You told
Let's
me.
See, now, wait a minute.
Yes, you did.
Yeah, Roy McMurrow. Yeah, I think so. Roy McMurrow was his son. I was named after him, by the way.
Well, you are his son.
Yeah. Say, you know something? That creek used to be a real deep creek there, and I learned to swim as it made the corner right by Loretta's barn.
Yeah.
And it was that deep, that creek, and there's hardly anything there now.
No.
I wonder why.
I don't know where that water went.
Well,
there was a dam upstream of it, wasn't there?
Oh,
Brewery
had a dam, uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
In the 90s, it would appear that a lake was put in there,
oh,
and a city park established where the park is now.
Yes, uh-huh.
The 90s, no.
No, it wasn't. It was later than that.
Oh, it was
much
World
later.
War One.
Yeah.
That was when the lake was put in?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, all right, we've done... Up the hill then came the roll.
All right.
Getting back to Spruce Street. What did the roll look like at your earliest recollections?
Well, it didn't change much, as I recall. It didn't change a great deal.
We tore down that big frame
addition
that was tacked on the west end of it.
On the west end. That's where Effie Early lived, wasn't it?
No, it's where Annie Holmes lived.
Oh?
No, not Annie Holmes. Annie Holmes lived in the rock part.
Oh.
The center part?
In the center part. She just rented it. She never owned it.
Uh-huh.
And when we bought it, we had to put her out.
Yeah. Said, you know something? One time there was a very dignified salesman calling on me, and poor old Annie came in, and she was dressed terrible, you know, poor thing. And she brought, who's dead? And I told her who had passed away. I had the ambulance in her service here. I serviced 12 funeral homes in 3 counties. That was my work. And she said, well, who's dead? And I said, told her. And the poor thing was dressed, her stockings were all twisted, you know, and she looked awful. And when she went out, the traveling man said to me, "Who in the world is that?" And I told him. And she, "How could you be so nice to her?" I'd be nice to her no matter who was here, and I would. I don't believe in putting people down further than what they are. Give them a raise them up. Yeah.
So she lived in the center section.
Yeah.
Who lived on the, in the right-hand house, the east house?
I don't know. I don't know about the
Kenneth. Well, Kate Schmidt lived there at the end.
Who?
Kate Schmidt.
Oh, Kate Smith. Yeah, that's right. She married a Basting, was she?
She was a brick, wasn't she?
Yeah, she was a brick. Well, no, her sister married Basting. That's the way. They lived on the east side, the east part,
Yeah, we bought the east side from Kate Schmidt. But I don't have any recollection of who lived there before Kate Schmidt.
I don't either. I don't either.
Or in the center part, other than Shady Phillips and Genevieve Phillips lived in there.
Now, where do the earliest live? The Black family
right
that everybody
mentioned. Right in there, as I recall.
No, Edgar's house is Ed, Nephew Earley's. Edgar's house.
Oh, yeah, I believe that's right. Well, in later years, didn't they live down there in the row, in the west?
No, part? I think if he died up, she was living up in Edgar's house when she died. Ed died first, you know.
Yes.
And then Effie lived there alone.
Yeah. You know, she called me up one day. Okay. Well, I stopped in front of the Madison General Hall. I said, "Miss Early, this is the place here." I said, "If you want me to go in and show you where to go and what to do, I'd be glad to do it." I sure wish you would, she said. So we went in, and she's terribly crippled up. I had to help her. She was a large lady, too. And the office there, the lobby, was full of people waiting for visiting hours, you know. And they'd look at me and they'd look at her. I suppose they thought she's my girlfriend or something. I don't know. And anyway, she had never been to Madison before. She'd never ridden on an elevator. And when I took over the elevator, the whites were eyes showed. And they run them fast anyway. And she said to me, "Roy, where's the ladies' room?" I said, "Right over here." And she was so timid, you know. She wouldn't never have seen Ed had I not gone with her. Anyway, I found out what his room number was, and he went in. There's another guy in a bed over the same room. And Ed was telling her what to do. He knew he wasn't going to get better, and telling her about their funeral arrangements and all that stuff. And this guy kept looking at Effie all the time she was there, and she's so timid. She came out, and I was there waiting for her. And she said, "You know, I don't know one word that Ed told me. That old man in the other bed kept looking at me all the time I was in the room." And she didn't get any good out of it at all, you know. But she was a very nice person.
But they did not live, in your recollection, in the west end of the row.
I think so. That's what I thought. In later years, I thought so. But I remember when they lived up in Edgar's, too.
Well, they sold out. They had a sale.
Yeah.
Of Effie Sings up where Edgar lives.
Uh-huh.
And Peterson was the executor of her
estate. Yeah, I've never seen the bill.
And I didn't know where they lived before that. No. Their father was Henry Early.
Yeah, Henry, that's right.
And he had a harness. Was it leather or harnesses?
I think leather, I don't know, something like that.
And his father was Robert Early, who was a freed slave.
Oh.
There's a picture of Robert Early in the Gundry scrapbook at the Minnehaha Room.
Uh-huh.
Well, how would you characterize that neighborhood when you first remembered it? Was it independent, more or less, from the rest of town, or integrated? And that is, did it have its own stores, and you remember the shoe shop, etc.?
Well, that's about the only store in the pot factory.
Yeah.
That was the only thing down there.
I didn't know that was a pot factory, though.
Okay.
Well, you're not old enough. Right?
No, that's it. I'm very young.
But it
there were no stores other than Kid Day's shoe store on Spruce Street. There were no stores. There wasn't a little community entity in itself.
So it was very much a part of town.
Part of town.
Uh-huh.
Okay. did it have an ethnic identity attached to it, such as Cornish or Yankee or anything of that
sort? I don't think so.
No, I don't think so.
In your recollection, has there ever been a part of town that did?
Yeah.
What?
What did you say?
Has there, which part, in your recollection, has any part of Mineral Point ever had a Cornish identification or
well,
some other kind of...
Darvis in that area, well, definitely Cornish. Kislingberry and Francis.
And Francis. But then up here on Jackson Street, Mr. Gurney always referred to that as Frenchtown.
Frenchtown.
What was Emma? Really? What was Emma Whalen's mother's name?
Emma Whalen. Oh, Emma. Her mother? No, God, I don't know.
Oh, began with G.
Can you give me a little more?
What?
Emma Whalen. I really don't know. No, that's good. Back
well,
to
that was always Frenchtown. Supposedly, people. French descent lived there, and then down further, which I've never been able to identify, is an area that was mining, and it was known as the Irish Mines.
Oh.
I presume worked by Irishmen.
This sure. Could be south?
Yeah.
What about south, what street?
South of Frenchtown. South of Jackson
Street.
South Jackson. Uh-huh. Was there an Italian section of town?
Oh, yes, and there still is.
A what?
Italian.
Oh, yeah.
Right
yeah,
over here at the end of this street.
Yeah.
Which is State Street.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How many Italians?
Oh, there used to be a number of Italians. And, you know, they didn't have anything in their home. They sat on boxes, no curtained up the windows or anything like that. And now they have the nicest place in town.
Did they come to mine?
Work at the furnace.
About what time did they, what period did they first begin arriving?
Early, maybe early.
Came here first to work on the railroad.
Did they? Is that
yeah, railroad? Yeah. Now, what am I, how can I document that? I thought everybody thinks that they were brought over like slaves from Sicily to work in the zinc works. Well, they weren't. They got their jobs after they got here at the zinc works. And do you remember that long dormitory sort of house over on by the zinc works up here on the hill? Well, it's on the left, this left-hand side of State Street where a lot of the single Italians lived. I think Petruzzi lived in there. Wasn't he murdered in there?
I don't know the place you're talking about. On the left-hand side of State Street?
On this side of State Street, way over.
Way over. How far over?
Well, the other would be beyond 5th, beyond 6th Street, maybe.
No, I don't recall that.
Oh, I don't recall the building, but
I know.
What was that Bertuzzi's name?
Frank? Frank Bertuzzi?
His father.
Oh,
he got murdered. They all said it was the mafia.
Here in Mineral Point?
Mafia in that
day. How would you characterize the hill, the Strong's Addition, as it's referred to on the plats, where the larger houses
well,
are?
Well, I think that's residential.
Yeah.
What ethnic group, if any, was associated with that?
None particularly, I don't think.
American.
Yes.
All right. Do you think that the city park, being across the street from Pendarvis, what is Pendarvis today, has had any effect in helping those buildings survive? You
no.
said there were 70 there, 13 left, etc.
No, nothing. The park was started. Doc Brown was mayor.
Yeah, Doc Brown was mayor, that's right.
And this was the Soldiers, it was called the Soldiers Memorial Park. And it was done after World War One.
Say, do you remember Reuben Aldrich? He had a boat that used to go around there and charge a nickel or something. I don't know. And one fair time here, Reuben Aldrich, he had a butter place down there.
Right? Well, in your where you were born.
Yeah, right there, right there. Uh-huh. Well, anyway, he had an airplane, and they announced that Reuben Eldridge was going to attempt a parachute jump. So the plane came up and circled around, you know, and out comes the thing, and the parachute didn't open. Oh, Reuben's gone, he's dead. Pretty soon he came in the amphitheater smoking a big cigar. How do you do, folks? How do you do? It was a dummy on that. Reuben Eldridge at all. Oh, he was terrible. Terrible.
Oh, he and Harry Nora were...
Oh, say, you know something?
Malicious, they were. They had a vicious streak in them. They abused the Arvine and Harold Toby.
Yeah. They gave him a bar of soap to try to wash the black off. And they said, well, it won't come off, that's down deep.
And Harry Nora took some at the creamery down there.
Yes.
Where you were born. They had milk cream cans come in on the railroad. And the cans are numbered as to who the farmer was that owned them. And they evidently had paint down there. And Harry Knorr painted Arvine Toby with stripes on his face, made him look like a Zulu, and sent him
They were terrible.
Oh, they were terrible.
Yeah, the McElhone girls, I should drive them quite a bit. They owned the house there where they stored these milk cans, you know. And they weren't paying any storage on it. So they told me one day they want to stop there and talk to them. And they went in, and Rube and Harry made out they were deaf, stone deaf. And I could hear them yelling at them, you know. And they came out, and they were just, they were school teachers in Chicago. And they were just all in. She said, I don't care if we don't get no rent. I'm never going to go in there again. Those two men are just stone deaf. They can't hear nothing. They were just wore out.
Well, Harry kept that on until later years.
Sure.
When the kids had come for a trick or treat, he'd pretend he couldn't understand them.
Yeah, that was
cup his ears and say, tickle my feet. And the kids would just wave at him and go along. He was a corker. And then Fred Gulner, when they got Arvine Toby, they bought him a suit of clothes, and Fred Gulner wanted something done in his boiler factory down there, and hired Arvine to go in. He went in with this new suit of clothes, crawled in the boiler, and just ruined it.
Arvine got married, you know, and he came up to me, he was up in Wiesen's barbershop with his new wife, and he said, I gotta go down to Roy's and introduce my wife to Roy. Well, evidently I wasn't home, and I didn't get to meet her. But he died, didn't he?
They're both gone.
Yeah, both gone. What became of Ethel Toby?
I don't know. She might be
And living. Tootie, the oldest one, Willie.
Willie, he died up in Muscadet, not so
I
many
I saw
years
him one time up there, in that area,
not
years
so many
ago.
Years ago.
Uh-huh.
The Tobys are, of course, black.
Yeah, that's right. Uh-huh. Yeah.
But they're all gone from Mineral Point.
Yeah,
although
all gone.
Descendants may still be...
No.
Around, not even up in Muscadet, all right.
I don't think so.
Back to Pendarvis. how closely would you say the people and the buildings, the people who lived in the buildings themselves were associated with the mining industry, or would you associate them with something else?
Well, I would think mining, wouldn't you, Bob? That's where the street goes near.
Well, Sammy Angle, what did he do? He drove
the team and horses. Hauled, yeah.
Drayman.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they tell that story about, what was Sampy's wife's name?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know what her name was.
What about the Phillipses? What did they do for a living?
Well, some of them farmed, George Phillips farmed.
No, Shady.
Where did Sherman Phillips work, do you know? Not right next to Lang's house there, Sherman Phillips, the house. Well, it's your guest house, it used to be your guest house. Sherman Phillips, don't you call him?
No, I know the name. Here we go.
George farmed.
Well, the Schmidts that you mentioned, for example, what did they do for them?
I think he worked at the zinc works, didn't he?
Well, who was it you said?
Schmidt. Kate Schmidt's husband.
Oh.
I think he worked at the
I think so.
Okay. All the pension records and all the things are on deposit at the Mineral Point room.
For For the zinc works?
For the zinc works.
Well, then we can do that work ourselves. Would you consider Pendarvis, the area around it, sort of in the edge of town down there, or did it have a different kind of connotation?
Well, the brewery was out for, still further than that.
You consider the brewery more the edge of town? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, extreme edge.
The extreme edge, but did the people who live down there, in your estimation, it's always said by so many people that this was the slum of Mineral Point. We're trying to figure out when it may have acquired that reputation.
Did you ever look up in Webster's on the Ridge the definition of shake rag?
Not a shake rag, a slum, I thought you were going to ask me. All right, tell me.
It means, Webster's on the Bridge says it's a low-class area. Well, it identifies it. Look it up, Sam.
Sam is Mr. Sam Holmes, who's the host today of this taping. Who hasn't been introduced on the table. And he's looking up Shake Rag.
So Shake Rag really has two connotations, the shaking of the rag and this definition of a...
Were the zinc mines and the lead mines in the same places?
No.
No, we're not.
Lead was first, of course.
Say, were you ever in a mine? I never was.
Our dad took me down the mine.
I never was in a mine.
Scared to death all the time.
Oh, yeah.
The man, the superintendent of the mine, was a heavy-set man. And you know these iron buckets that they used to haul the ore up? They'd lower it in, and this Mr. Weil, who was superintendent of the mine, I was in the bucket with a kind of a slicker on, Dad was in.
Oh.
And this Mr. Weil put 1 foot in, let 1 foot hang out, and it tipped the, threw the thing off center, and I was scared to death to get down there, water dripping.
How far down?
Well, the Cornish never mined.
Deep.
They couldn't mine below the water table.
Uh-huh.
They'd get down and hit water, and that was it. All right.
Well, so that the immediate diggings around the 1870 bird's eye map, 71 or 2 bird's eye map, shows diggings for lead in the immediate vicinity of the Pendarvis houses. But they were not used later, those diggings, for zinc mining.
They never, never mined zinc with them.
That was later.
That was the zinc ore. They knew what it was, but it was discarded. What do you got, Sam?
Well, in the Webster's Dictionary, Bob, they don't define shake rag, but in the Oxford Dictionary, they do.
Good.
They define shake rag as a ragged, disreputable person, also beggarly. So you're right, in essence.
The English word or definition then would be that of a lower
stratum.
Originally, of course, it was called Hard Street on the map that we always refer to.
Yeah.
When did it acquire?
Well, you know, that's a contraction. It was named after Robert Hort, and it was a, as I've always understood, it was a misspelling pronunciation. It was Robert Howard.
Oh.
And the W was dropped in copying some of the records. You ever come across that?
Haven't yet. I don't know who the Hort was in question.
Well,
of course, we know who Robert Hort was.
Oh yes, you know Robert Hort was. It was his name, the name was Howard, and I don't know if they're related to the illustrious Howards of England or not. All right, never mind.
Well, okay, the zinc mines, though, were farther south, were they?
As I started to say, the lead mines were worked with the windlass, and they worked down to water. They couldn't go beyond that. The zinc was discarded. They knew what it was, but they had no way of smelling it until Madison and Hegler came in here with a smelting system that they brought over from Freiburg, Germany, and founded the zinc works. Phelps Dodge was connected here too, Sam. Mm-hmm. I've often wondered whether they have any early records. Mr. Gundry told me that there used to be a smelting plant, and I think it must have been Phelps Dodge, down by the Mile Crossing.
Oh, yes.
There's no indication of any buildings or nothing there unless you got in and looked around and see whether there's any footings left. But until they had a system of smelting the zinc, it was discarded. And then Eastern Interests came in and bought mining rights and dug deep.
And brought in the new technological equipment and information. Technically speaking, too, the Cornish did know about how to pump, because they had...
Oh, the Hoskins pump.
They were using pumps in the 1820s and 30s very successfully in Cornwall to keep mines dry. Evidently, they didn't choose to do the same thing here, maybe for financial reasons, I don't know.
Piggy Sow was always considered a wet mine.
Oh, was it?
He's, you know, out here, he's up the creek here.
Yeah, we should go swimming there, Piggy Sow.
Piggy Sow.
And Copper Bottom was the other tree.
Yeah, well, that's that was one of the copper mines.
Yeah.
The Piggy Sow.
Where is the Piggy Sow? Can you be a little more specific?
East of Mineral Point. That's up there. East of Mineral Point.
Okay. Of course, in our research, you become very interested in specific names. I know that you know the Kislingberry family. The two earliest Kislingberries, so far as we can determine, were George and Richard. And we, first of all, want to know whether you know how they were related and whether you know members of their respective families today. And secondly, we are very curious because we know that George Kislingberry was born in Berkshire, in East Isley. How does he become a Cornishman?
Well, Will Kislingberry was our carpenter out of Pendarvis. And
whose son was he, do you know?
I don't know what his father's
name. I don't know either.
Do you remember Cora Kislingberry?
Sure, I remember Cora.
Sister.
You bet.
Well, I just talked a week ago when St. Louis was all snowed in. I got a call from Francis Kislingberry Telfair, and who took all of our pictures out of Pendarvis. He was our local. We permitted him access to interiors, which we wouldn't allow anybody else. So Barry and Francis Telfair have always been very close to us, and when, in fact, I broke in the house, had to break in Kislingberry's house and found him dead on the floor, you know, up there in the corner, you know where he lived.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And you could contact Barry and Francis Telfair. She was a Kislingberry. Her father was Henry Kislingberry.
Yeah.
And they lived out across from the Pendarvis. And then we used to go out to Kislingberry's for scalded cream.
Yeah, we did too.
Did you?
Uh-huh. I thought you were going to see the pink violets. That whole bottom, the whole meadow there.
It, well, it was boggy, kind of boggy.
Where is this house?
Kislingberry's.
Describe the location.
Right across from Pendarvis, right across from
Francis's
house, place, farther up the street.
Uh-huh. That is Henry Kislingberry?
Will.
Will and Henry.
Oh, Henry, yeah, that's
brothers.
Right.
Uh-huh. Now, let's see, what was I going to say?
Did you consider them Cornish?
Yes. Uh-huh. See, one time I was eating up in the restaurant, and Bill Kislingberry came in and sat right by me. And he ordered a half dinner. And I had the works, you know, the whole thing. And I thought it should be reversed. He got more money than I have. I should be eating the half. And he had awful tight, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Awfully tight.
What did you do for a living?
What?
Carpenter.
Yeah, carpenter. Uh-huh.
Carpenter.
He wasn't very friendly, was he? Not like us, you know. kind of distant.
But you could write to them, 736.
Well, we've been in touch with the Telfairs, too.
Well, why don't you say so?
Take
the words out of my mouth.
Sorry about that. The, well, we obviously have to ask the same people many of the same questions. George Kislingberry, we know, married a Whitford. What do you know of the Whitford family around here today?
A lot of Whitfords.
Yes.
A lot of Whitfords, yeah, I don't know.
But you don't know how they're connected?
No,
all right.
No.
Do you know anything about, I hope I say this name right for Middle Pointers, Nicholas and William Urin.
They just changed that in later years, urine, you know.
They do say urine now.
Uh-huh. But the U apostrophe R-E-N, uh-huh. Urin.
Uh-huh. Well,
they add a little juice to the conversation out east of town in the Woolwich, in that area. The Pratts, Balls, Urines, and Coxes had a family reunion.
Well, Nicholas and William are associated with the east end of the roll. They were the ones who bought it from the builder, who was obviously Samson Thomas, and his son-in-law, John Gray. Susanna Thomas married John Gray, and they came over in 44 with her parents, Samson and Susan Thomas. And
where did Liz go? Upstairs?
Oh, this is Mrs. Holmes.
I don't know where she went.
Well, there's a there's quite a, I got from one of the Gray family descendants, the whole history of the Thomases and the Grays.
And that's in the Mineral Point room now.
I think it is.
Terrific.
Wonder whether Liz came across it.
Well, we'll ask her about it, believe me. Okay, they didn't own it terribly long, and they sold it to Nicholas and or William Urin.
Where do you get this information?
From the deeds and the mortgages.
From the mortgages and the
deeds and the mortgages.
Are there abstracts on the properties out there?
Yes, we have abstracts as well. They're in the Secretary of State's office now.
We had abstracts drawn on all of the property out there, and I wondered whether there was still an extent.
Oh, yes. They're in the Secretary of State's vault. well kept. We have a Xerox, a partial Xerox we could show you if you want to look at them.
No, that'd be source material, certainly.
Well, then we went from the, in part, we went from the abstract to the deeds and mortgages, but we also used them independently. And we were wondering whether you know about how Nicholas and William Urin were related.
I don't.
You don't? Okay, we won't bother you with those. Does the name Ann or Anna Williams ring a bell? The wife of Henry Williams, who married John Tregay. Then they were divorced. It must have been rather a scandal because they were together only a little while. And that she is the one for whom Pendarvis was built, according to the court suit.
John.
Oh, is that right?
That's right.
Penberthy and Tregay are names on the first on the Pendarvis deeds and abstracts.
Yeah, peculiar John circumstance. I better spell this out to you, Mr. Neal. I actually did a broadcast on it after we found the court suits. Mr. Kislingberry was a little sloppy in his record keeping at the courthouse. And in 1843, the year he got married, he straightened out his act. He had a surveyor come in and do a special survey of the lots of Lot 192. And he shows how he had it divided at that point, even though there were no sales from it quite yet. And the names of the persons are associated with it. Moyle is on there.
I never heard the name Moyle.
Yeah.
How do you say that again?
M-O-Y-L-E, Moyle.
No.
We can show you a copy of the map.
No.
But, in any event, Pendarvis, the little 25-foot lot on which it is set off, it was not yet...
33-foot lot.
That was Trelawney.
Pendarvis is...
25.
Are you sure?
Yep. We'll show you. Okay, sizes don't count. The first person to get it on the deeds or in the mortgages was a man named Penberthy, James Penberthy.
Oh, that was my father's name.
But
it wasn't.
Different one.
Yeah.
Okay. Actually, he never built or lived in the house. It was strictly a mortgage arrangement that is spelled out in a court suit that Mrs. John Tregay had against Mrs. Catherine Penberthy, the widow of James, in the 1850s. And she relates precisely in the suit and all the evidence what went on. Her husband, Henry Williams, had purchased without benefit of deed or instrument the land on which Pendarvis stands in 1845 and built on it that same year, beginning in June, Pendarvis, the cottage. He died in 48. Just before his death, Mr. Kislingberry brought together Mr. Penberthy and Mr. Williams and had Mr. Penberthy lend $50 to Mr. Williams to pay for the property on which the house stands, and the deed was given to Mr.